That memory of Gavilar's funeral. So vivid. He'd forgotten parts. Had that been the Night Watcher? Or the natural course of memories? The more he recovered of what he had lost, the more he realized that the memories of men were flawed. He'd mentioned an event, now fresh in his mind, and others who had lived it would argue over details, as each recalled it differently. Most, Navani included, seemed to remember him as more noble than he deserved. Yet, he didn't ascribe any magic to this. It was simply the way human beings, subtly changing the past in their minds to match their current beliefs.
Heroes of presents The Storm Pod, a Stormlight Archive podcast. Book 3, Oathbringer.
This is just a quick spoiler warning for Chapter 107, The First Step. We're only doing the one chapter today. It probably could have been grouped in with the next one, but they're both pretty large chapters. So I decided to split them up and give these chapters a little bit of room to breathe. So if you haven't caught up on your reading yet, or you've skipped an episode, make sure that you go back and do that. We wouldn't want you to be spoiled, but we do want you to enjoy the episode. Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Sean Q, and even the Stormfather calls him Stormblessed. It's Jack. What's up, dude?
Hey, hey. We have not been, we've had a little hiatus, haven't we?
We kind of had. I don't think the listeners really are going to realize it because we had such a bank set up that we had to kind of dig into.
We had a bank.
Yeah, we have had...
And then we robbed our own bank.
We literally robbed our own bank. We robbed it from inside. Yeah, it was the inside job. Remember that movie with Clive Owen?
The Inside Man.
The Inside Man, is that what it's called?
The Inside Man.
Yeah, that's a good movie.
Yeah, that was such a good one.
Yeah. Yeah, so if anybody probably hasn't even realized, because hopefully we are going to be able to catch up on our episodes that you won't even notice. But yeah, we were pretty much out of commission for a few weeks here. We had a lot of prior engagements. I lost my beloved Lucienne, Darina, Marie Beauregard, my 96-year-old grandmother passed away last week, which she was the matriarch of our family.
Very sorry to hear that.
That's okay. Thank you very much for that. She had 9 kids, 19 grandkids, and 28 great-grandkids. It was a huge family, and she really taught us all how to love. She was amazing. She just was so full of it, so full of love. She was awesome. So anyway, so we've had a few things happen over the course of the last few weeks, and we haven't been able to record. But dude, I am so happy to be back with you here. You know, you and I try to like talk as much as we can, but a lot of our time when we spend together is here on recording. And, you know, I missed you, bud.
Yeah. Well, so did I, of course. I missed you, too.
Yeah. So right off the bat, what did you think about... Oh, hold on. Actually, I have something that I have to talk to you about before get into the material.
Go ahead.
We got a message from a listener on Reddit, and I really wanted to bring your attention to it because it's something that happened in our recording that we kind of missed. Okay?
Sure.
It's the chapter where Navani is holding the meeting, pieces of a Fabriel, and ELA comes in, remember? And ELA comes in with someone, and we're like, what the fuck? So, notably, ELA Sadeus ignored the requirement that she carry her own chair. A scarred guardsman placed a sleek lacquered chair down for her, stained so dark a maroon, it might as well have been black. Okay, so that line was legit just a super cheese line, not much going on with it. You asked, do we know who the scarred guy is? In one of the past episodes. And I said, beats the shit out of me. I have no idea who the scarred guy is. Someone on Reddit wrote this. You remarked that the scarred guard that carried Ilai's chair, that scarred could indicate that they were that person was dangerous work. I think the scars were meant to identify him to the reader as Marais. Because remember, Marais was part of Ilai's entourage in Urithiru. Right. Remember when Adolin and Shallan went to meet with Ilai and Marais was there? And Shallan's like, what the fuck are you doing here? Well, that scarred face is Marais, and he was in on that meeting.
That's crazy.
Isn't it cool?
I would never would have caught that.
Me either.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So thanks a lot to external guilds.
But do you think it's real?
Sorry?
Do you think it's real?
I think so. I absolutely think so. Because we were told earlier in the book that Ilai has this guard, and Shallan's like, holy shit, that's Marais. And he's got these notable scars on his face.
Yeah, yeah, he does.
Right. Isn't that cool?
I never would have got that. Yeah, that's amazing.
That's really cool.
That's really
great.
And
it makes sense he would have made it so that he was part of that council meeting. He wants to know everything that's going on, right?
Of course.
Yeah.
What better way to get all the intel?
What a good
trick
than
to be right there.
The devil played on us, right? The devil made us forget that he even existed. To quote the usual suspects, that he wasn't even there.
That's phenomenal.
Yeah. Isn't that cool? So yeah, a big shout out to External Gills on Reddit for throwing that out to us. Thank you so much for saying that. And also negative points for Buzzkill for not catching that.
For not catching it.
Sorry, we just
10 points, you know, taken off of Ravenclaw.
Yeah, it's 50 points for we dap up Buzzkill too much. So this is where we have to bring him down a peg. So so let me ask you, what did you think about this weird chapter, this like mostly POV Dalinar chapter with a tiny little amuse-bouche of Taravangian at the end?
It's a little bit so it's kind of a an information dump, if you will, about the state of things, the state of Dalinar, how a few of them look at him. I think my highlight is when Queen Fenn puts Dalinar in his place.
Yeah.
Like it's and it's a very short-lived little moment in the chapter. Like there was not much left to linger on. Mm-hmm. I kind of wanted more of that.
Right.
But perhaps it didn't really need to be more, but it's certainly my highlight of the chapter.
We know that in dealing with Queen Fenn, she really is engaged when she talks like that. When she's more formal and diplomatic and not ruffling any feathers, it means she doesn't really care.
Yeah.
This shows that she cares, so that means he's still got her. Like, he still has her allegiance. Because otherwise, if he didn't... Yeah. She would just be all prim and proper and not say anything.
That's
you know?
Right.
I like that. I like knowing that about Queen Fenn.
Pardon me. That's that was my highlight. Other than that, I mean, it's
kind of... Did we just start with
the
highlights? Yo, we just started with highlights.
I know. Weird, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, well. Huh. That's okay.
Backwards
Well, we didn't get yours.
I'll tell you at the end.
You'll tell me at the proper time.
Yeah.
Well, I just blurted my note right there. So, this chapter's not one of my favorites, let's say, as a chapter, but we do get a little bit more of the, the dichotomous or mysterious nature of Taravangian.
Right.
I kind of almost like the fact that when Dalinar comes across him and he's like, well, how come you're not in the king's meeting? Mm-hmm. And I kind of took that thematically to mean, well, because he's not a monarch, like he's not who he says he is.
Right.
Like he's outside of this meeting because he doesn't actually belong.
He doesn't belong there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I thought really that cool. But I sort of ruminated on that. But then of course, in the next few sentences, Dalinar says, come on, let's go. And then they go.
Yeah.
So my little theme was kind of swirling for like all but 2 seconds.
It's definitely Dalinar is completely enthralled with the spell that Taravangian has cast, right? Like he's bitten, like, you know, on everything that Taravangian says. He's got him.
Do you think that there's any chance that Dalinar is actually one up on Teravangian?
If he is, he is not saying anything about it in his POVs, like in his own mind.
Like, we don't have any evidence to support something like that.
If, do you, you remember back in Words of Radiance, when Dalinar was playing the long game with Amaram, we didn't have a lot of Dalinar POVs then, because if we had, then Dalinar would be thinking about the thing.
Would have revealed more.
Right.
So it was so limited, but now we're getting a lot of Dalinar POVs.
Right, and so we're in his head, we're with him, so especially when he sees Teravangian, and it's his POV.
Well, let's jump into this one then. Mm-hmm. So let's get our teeth into chapter 107, the first step. Mm-hmm. It begins with an excerpt from Hesse's Mythica, page 226. There is very little information about Ba-Ado Mishram. In more modern times, I can only assume she, unlike many of them, returned to damnation or was destroyed during Ahariah time. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
Well, when Hesse's doing her research, there seems to be no evidence that Ba'ado Mishram is even around right now. So it's very possible that this is an unmade that had gotten defeated at some point. We know one of Ba'ado Mishram's powers was being able to grant void light to Parshendi, to void bringers, while Odium wasn't around. Like, because, you know, without like a storm that gives void light, without an Everstorm that gives void light, Ba'ado Mishram could do it. So it allows them to do their surges and all that stuff. So this
surges,
is, we know that
yeah.
Ba'ado Mishram is one of the causes of the false desolation.
Right.
Because a bunch of them were able to kind of level up, find new forms, use surges, but it wasn't a true desolation because Odium hadn't kind of emerged at all.
This chapter begins with Dalinar and a wash basin that's been placed and ready for him in the morning. Navani kept it filled just as she cleaned up the bottles and allowed the servants to bring him more. She trusted him better than he trusted himself. Mm-hmm. So this is during the last of his, like, drinking round that he's just been on?
Yeah, he's, like, he went on a bender, and now he's, like, coming out of it a little bit.
Stretching in his bed, Dalinar woke, feeling far too whole, considering the drinking that he'd been doing. Indirect sunlight illuminated the room from the window. Normally, they kept the shutters in this room closed to ward off the cold mountain air. Navani must have opened them after rising. Mm-hmm. Dalinar splashed his face with water from the basin and then caught a hint of his own scent. Right. He looked into one of the connecting rooms, which they'd appropriated for a washroom, as it had a back entrance the servants could use. Sure enough, Navani had ordered the tub filled for him. The water was cold, but he'd known his share of cold baths. It would keep him from lingering. So he's doing some cold plunges here.
Right. It's polar bearing.
He's breaking out his Wim Hof.
Like, let's tighten up those pores there, Dalinar.
A short time later, he took a razor to his face, peering at himself in a bedroom mirror. Gavilar had taught him to shave. I like that. It was his brother.
Yeah.
Thought that was cool. Their father had been too busy getting himself cut apart in foolish duels of honor, including the one where he'd taken a blow to the head. He'd never been right after that.
This is a very rare instance where we hear anything about Adolin
Dalinar's
and Narn's grandfather. Yeah.
Right.
About Gavilar and Dalinar's dad or even either
dueling
one of their
for
parents.
Honor.
Yeah. So yeah, very, very
getting
strange.
Getting hit in the head, never been right after that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, it's three books. We're almost done three books here and this is the first time we've ever really heard about Gavilar and Dalinar's dad, right? So yeah, really interesting.
That's right. Beards were unfashionable in Alethkar these days, but that wasn't why Dalinar shaved. He liked the ritual, the chance to prepare, to cut away the nightly chaff and reveal the real person underneath, furrows and scars and harsh features included.
Mm-hmm.
When I read it, it sounds cool, but it's like, well, hang on. Like, isn't he kind of trying to hide the Blackthorn?
In some ways,
it felt like, okay, like you're wanting to reveal the scars underneath, but isn't that just a display of this thing that you are, you know you are, but you're still trying to hide it, especially from these people while forging these alliances and carrying forward? I don't know. It felt a little bit like...
like a disguise?
Like out of place for him to say that.
Yeah.
Or to think that. But anyways, it's still cool nonetheless. A clean uniform and underclothes waited for him on a bench. He dressed and then checked the uniform in the mirror, pulling down on the bottom of the coat to tighten any folds. That memory of Gavilar's funeral was so vivid. He'd forgotten parts. Had that been the Night Watcher? Or the natural course of memories? The more he recovered of what he had lost, the more he realized that the memories of men were flawed. He'd mention an event now, fresh to his mind, and others who had lived it would argue over the details as each recalled it differently.
Mm-hmm.
Most, Navani included, seemed to remember him as a more noble than he deserved, yet he didn't ascribe any magic to this. It was simply the way of human beings, subtly changing the past in their minds to match their current beliefs.
I love this chapter, or this paragraph.
Do you think this is going to permeate our experience as readers?
Maybe. It's great because it, you know, I like how he says even Navani remembers him as being more noble than he deserves. And I
right.
think that we are doing the same. Our memories of Dalinar from book one and two are honorable memories. And now we're receiving these old memories back as well, just like Dalinar. But our
right.
idea of Dalinar is more noble than he deserves. I really like this.
I like this too. It really is an invitation to basically discovering who you are as the reader.
Right.
However, you and I have had a great deal of talks about wrestling with the idea of Dalinar, like
right.
wrestling with this Blackthorn.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We've compared it to the journey of Anakin Skywalker.
Right.
Trying to wrestle that out. I think that as a reader, you are invited to basically this conclusion
mm-hmm.
that he is more noble than what he deserves. What I find interesting is that everybody remembers things differently.
Right.
And the information that we have about all of this can be subject to exactly that.
Right. Yeah, I also like this idea that memories fade and change over time. See, he's getting mm-hmm. these old memories fresh in his
right.
mind again, and time
right.
hasn't weathered them and changed them for him. Whereas anybody else who remembers the same events, they remember them differently because time
right.
has changed things. I really
right.
like this idea of like, well, no, you guys are remembering that total wrong. I was a total fucking asshole.
Right.
Yeah.
That's interesting. That's really, I mean, I don't know. This is, yeah, that's a, there's a lot to think about there. Where do you currently stand if you forget about what you know, or if you can forget about what you know about
mm-hmm.
the next book? Where would you say you would stand right now with Dalinar?
I think that the more and more we talk about it, some of the conversations we had with Megs while we did some role playing with her about
mm-hmm.
redemption and what it really means, I feel like
mm-hmm.
I'm probably at the same space I've always been, which is Dalinar didn't do anything to me. He did bad things to people in his past, and I'm only
mm-hmm.
being told about it now, but that wasn't to me, the reader.
He's honorable and he's great to me. Whereas Moash betrayed me because I'm Bridge Four. I'm not from Rathalos.
Right.
I didn't live in the Rift.
Right.
Right? He didn't do anything bad to me. But Moash did something bad to me. I'm part of Bridge Four. I'm Dunny. I'm Drahi. I'm Scar. You know? I'm Sigzil. Right. I'm Rock. He betrayed me. Right? So that's why it's hard to cheer for a redemption arc for a character who you feel like personally slighted you as the reader, as opposed to Dalinar, right. where, you know, it wasn't his fault. And you know what? We didn't even really know about it until now. We had 2.5 books to love him, so it's hard to not love him now. You know what I mean? Still,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I guess my final thought about the question you just said was, it will really depend on what happens from now. What does he do now that he has these memories back? What does he do now that he has the potentiality of having the thrill overtake him and him becoming the Blackthorn again? What does he choose now? What can he do now? So where are you with it? That's really the better question, because I have the advent of what's to come. What do you, how do you feel about it?
Well, I wrestle with his past as the warlord.
Right.
And sort of this madman in battle. I mean, even with the memories that we have, it doesn't seem like he's... I wouldn't even describe him as a maniac in the battlefield.
No.
He's just, you know, he feels the thrill. He surges forward. Out of any of the battles that we've read about, has he been guilty of killing his own men?
Yeah.
He has.
Yeah, because he'll come out of his frenzy, his thrill frenzy, and there will be soldiers with his own colors on around him.
Right.
So, yeah, he's full on berserker frenzy, this guy.
Right, he is. You're right. Yeah, it's a tough one to wrestle with. Like I believe in the idea of a redemption story.
Mm-hmm.
I think that story has to be a hell of a good one.
Yeah.
Because it's forgiveness is a I guess I would say this, forgiveness is probably a different journey for all of us.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So I really want to embrace Dalinar. I'll admit I'm scared of his potentiality.
I want to embrace him.
I am.
But I'm scared of him.
But I'm scared of him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's so great.
It's so perfect.
It's like wanting to hug Darth Vader. It's like, yeah, I don't know if I can get there.
But
I certainly would like to.
He's like, don't squeeze too hard. Don't squeeze too hard. My chest is like collapsed and stuff. It's like the worst Darth Vader.
No, we won't go down that route.
All right, let's keep going.
Okay, let's keep going. Okay, so Navani included seemed to remember him more noble. Yeah. But then the vision, that vision with Noadon, where had that come from? Was it just a common dream?
This was our question at the end of that chapter, too. Was it just a dream?
Right. Was it just a dream?
Because people are allowed to dream, too, right? Like, not everything has to be a...
100%.
Right?
A vision or a purpose. It can just be...
A dream. Yeah.
100%. He reached out to the Stormfather, who rumbled distantly. "You're still there, I see," Dalinar says, relieved. "Where would I go?" the Stormfather asks. "Well, I hurt you," Dalinar said, "when I activated the Oathgate. I was afraid that you would leave me. This is the lot I have chosen. It is you or oblivion." What do you make of that statement?
I mean...
Does the Stormfather know? It is you that I bond with. You're the bondsmith.
That's right. He's made his choice for good or for ill.
I've made my choice. It's you or oblivion. Those are the stakes.
Right. Well, I think maybe because if they lose, then you know what I mean? Yeah. Like I'm really more in love with, I hurt you. I was afraid you would leave me.
Right.
Take away the magic, take away the oath gate. You take away that he's talking to a supernatural force.
Mm-hmm.
That he's magically bonded to this storm. Take away all that stuff.
Right.
I hurt you and I was afraid you would leave me is like the most human statement I've heard in this
from
book.
From Dalinar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we're all afraid that people will leave us sometimes if we, you know, make a wrong choice. And it's nice that the mm-hmm. Stormfather is like, it's you or nothing, bro. I'm with you. Like, let's go.
Well, I'm sorry regardless for what I did. Were you involved in that dream that I had? The one with Noadon? I know of no such dream. Mm-hmm. It was vivid, Dalinar says. More surreal than one of the visions. It was true, but captivating. What was the most important step a man could take? The first, obviously. But what did it mean? He still bore the weight of what he had done at the Rift. This recovery, this stepping away from the week was spent drinking, wasn't a redemption. What would he do if he felt the thrill again? What would happen the next time the weeping in his mind became too difficult to bear? Dalinar didn't know. He felt better today, functional, for now. He would let that be enough. He picked a piece of lint off his collar and then belted on his side sword and stepped out of the bedroom, walking through his study and into the larger room with the hearth. I really like that beginning of that paragraph, dude, mm-hmm. where he says he felt better today and for now that would be enough.
Right.
Just slow it down.
Yeah.
You went on a bender. It's not good, but it's a new day.
Yep.
Slow down. Try again.
That's why he liked the shave earlier too, right? It's a new day. Start over. Yeah.
Yeah. Teravangian, he asks, surprised to see the old man, this elderly king, seated just outside. Wasn't there to be a meeting of the monarchs today? They said that I wasn't needed. Nonsense, Dalinar says. We're all needed at the meetings. I've missed several, haven't I? Well, regardless, what are they talking about today? Tactics. So what I took for this, again, as I mentioned to you at the start of the pod, is that he doesn't belong there. That's why he's not there.
Yeah.
Doesn't deserve to be there. He shouldn't be there. That's thematically why he's not there. And also with what they're discussing, tactics, Teravangian's right where he needs to be.
Right. Yeah, because he's put himself
in Dalinar's ear.
Outside of Dalinar's room, pretty much. And he's the first person Dalinar gets to talk to after all this stuff. Maybe not Navani, but of the leaders, he's the first one.
Right.
Yeah.
Dalinar felt his face go red. The deployment of troops and the defense of Yaakoved, your kingdom. I think that they believe that I will give up the throne of Yaakoved once a suitable local man has been found. He smiled. Do not be so outraged on my behalf, my friend. They didn't forbid me. They simply noted that I wasn't needed. I wanted some time to think, so I came here. Still, let's go up, shall we? Teravangian nodded, standing, and he wobbled on unsteady legs. Dalinar hurried over to help him. Stabilized, Teravangian patted Dalinar's hand. Thank you. You know, I've always felt old, but lately it seems my body is determined to give me persistent reminders. Well, let me summon a palanquin to carry you. No, please. If I give up walking, I fear my deterioration will increase. I've seen similar things happen to people in my hospitals.
I'll say this.
Oh, that's so creepy for him to say too, right?
It's because he knows all the people in his hospitals. He's bloodletting and looking for a future. I mentioned my grandmother at the beginning of the episode, and her turn for the worst came once she couldn't go for her walks. That was what she did for 96 years, was go for walks. She'd have a meal and go for a walk. And Mimir going for a walk, that's what she did. Everyone knows Mimir loved her walks. And sorry for all the Americans or non-French Canadians who don't know what a Mimir is. We call our grandmothers grand-mère. And in my bilingual French Ontario side, we call our grand-mères, our grand-mères, mamères, like my mère, mamère. So anyways, so yeah, I feel this line here. You know, if I give up walking, I fear my deterioration will increase. I've literally seen it with my own family member.
Seen it.
It is true, right, man. Yeah.
Do you know, Dalinar said, if there's any word, what, from Kolinar? Teravangian asks. Dalinar nodded. He vaguely remembered updates from Navani. There's no news of Adolin, Elokar, or the Radiance. But had he been of sound enough mind to even listen? I'm sorry, Dalinar, Teravangian said. So far as I know, we haven't had a message from them. But we must keep hope, of course. They might have lost their span read or gotten trapped in the city. I may have felt something, the Stormfather said.
This is awesome.
During a recent high storm, it felt like Stormblessed was there with me. I do not know what it means, for I cannot see him, or the others, anywhere. I presumed them dead, but now I find myself believing. Why? Well, because you have hope, Dalinar whispers, smiling. Dalinar? Teravangian asks. Oh, just whispering to myself, Your Majesty.
Okay.
I love that, too.
That's my highlight, for a couple of reasons.
Okay.
The Stormfather refers storm-blessed to Kaladin as Stormblessed. So, mm-hmm, like, the Stormfather, I use that in the intro, the Stormfather legit calls him Stormblessed, which is amazing. Yeah. But the Stormfather has become like Bridge 4 sitting at the entrance to the chasms waiting for Kaladin to come back. He will come back.
Right.
I don't know why, but I find myself believing. Isn't that so awesome?
Right.
It's like he's like,
yeah,
I don't know why,
cool,
but he will come out of it. It's so awesome.
That's pretty great.
Yeah.
I hadn't really ruminated on it like that, but now that you say it like that, that's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's
like
just
that.
So cool.
That's great. Teravangian had appointed them after their predecessors had been poisoned following the Civil War. Yaakoved obviously still had many problems. Hang on. Did I just jump? I just jumped.
Yeah, quite a bit.
I think I did a big jump.
Chapter 107-8, people.
I'm at the end of the book, people.
That's funny.
No. Sorry, I read the wrong page. You've decided something. More, I've remembered something. Is it something you can share with a worried old man? Isn't that curious, too, how he's just, he wants more and more?
Right. Tell me everything, Dalinar.
Tell me everything, Dalinar.
I'm just a worried old man. You can trust me.
Yeah, I'm really worried about you. Tell me exactly what you're thinking.
It's awesome, dude. The duality of this character is just perfect.
It's pretty great. Not yet, Dalinar says. I'll try to explain once I have it figured out for myself. After an extended trip up the lifts, Dalinar led Teravangian into a quiet, windowless chamber on the penultimate floor of the tower. They dubbed it the Gallery of Maps, after a similar location in the war camps.
Mm-hmm.
Aladar led the meeting, standing beside a table that was covered by a large map of Alethkar and Yaakoved. His bodyguard was there too, someone named Mintez, who stood by him in full shard plate. And it says here, Aladar preferred not to use the shards personally. He was a general, not a warrior.
Right.
He nodded to Dalinar and Teravangian when they entered. ELA sat nearby and studied Dalinar, but said nothing.
Mm-hmm.
He'd almost have welcomed a wisecrack, because in the old days, she'd been quick to joke with him. Her silence now didn't mean she was being respectful. It meant she was saving her barbs to whisper where he couldn't hear.
Right.
So the nature of their relationship is obviously changed.
Yeah.
High Prince Ruthar, thick-armed and wearing a full beard, sat with Ile. He'd opposed Dalinar right from the start. The other Alethi High Prince who had come today was Haytham, a long-necked man with light orange eyes. Queen Fenn had brought the Thalen High Admiral, a scrawny old man with mustaches that drooped almost to the table. He wore a short sailor's saber and sash. That's funny.
Mm-hmm.
Looked like the kind of person who would complain about being on land for too long. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, that's awesome.
She'd also brought her son, the one that Dalinar had dueled, who saluted Dalinar sharply. Dalinar saluted back. That boy would make an excellent officer if he could learn to keep his temper. The Azish Emperor wasn't there, and nor was their little edge dancer. Instead, Azir had sent a collection of scholars. Azish generals tended to be of the armchair type, military historians and theorists who spent their days in books. Dalinar was certain they had men with practical knowledge in their military, but those rarely ended up promoted. So long as you failed certain tests, you could remain in the field and command. Dalinar had met the two Vedan High Princes during his trip to their city. The brothers were tall, prim men with short black hair and uniforms much like those of the Alethi. So here we're just kind of getting a cast of characters.
Right, an overview of everyone who's involved here.
An overview. Yeah. So not a terribly fun page of reading there, but we're getting through it.
Mm-hmm.
Taravangian had appointed them after their predecessors had been poisoned following the civil war. Yaakoved obviously still had many problems. Dalinar, Aladar says. He stood up straighter, then saluted him. Bright Lord, you're looking better. Storms, how much did the rest of them know? Well, everybody knows Dalinar.
Right.
That's the thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, you are Dalinar Colan. Everybody knows.
Everyone's going to know.
Yeah. You're George Clooney. Everyone knows.
Yeah. You're George Clooney.
Yeah. I've spent some time in meditation, Dalinar says. I see you've been busy. Tell me about the defensive array. Well, Aladar says, that's it? Queen Fenn interrupted. What in damnation was wrong with you? You ran all around Vidnor like a wild man, then locked yourself in your room for a week? I was excommunicated from the Vorin Church soon after hearing of Kolinar's fall. I took it poorly. Did you expect me to react by throwing a feast? I expected you to lead us, not sulk.
Yeah.
That was my highlight.
Mm.
And you're so right, too, because of what we know about Queen Fenn. If she hadn't spoken like that, it would have meant, I don't care about you
turned,
anymore.
Yeah, she had turned on him.
Or turned against him.
Right.
But because she said that,
mm-hmm.
yeah, she's still on
with
board.
Him, yeah.
Mm. So I really like that.
Mm-hmm.
I deserve that. You're right. You can't have a commander who refuses to command. I'm sorry. I thought that was also a good response for him, just to sort of
to apologize.
Cut to the chase.
It is very hard to apologize sometimes.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
The Azish whispered among themselves, looking surprised at the bluntness of the exchange, but Fenn settled back and Aladar nodded. Dalinar's mistakes needed to be aired. Aladar began explaining their battle preparations. The Azish generals, all wearing their robes and western hats, crowded around, offering commentary through translators. Dalinar used a little stormlight and touched one on the arm to gain access to their language.
Yeah.
For a short time, he found their advice surprisingly astute, considering that they were basically a committee of scribes. They'd moved 10 battalions of Alethi troops through the Oath Gates, along with 5 battalions of Azish. That put 15,000 men on the ground in Yaakoved, including some of their most loyal Colan and Aladar forces.
Right.
It's pretty incredible.
So we know that there's a change that comes in this chapter here, right? Because at the beginning, when they first last talked, or they last talked, they were like, it's got to be Yaakoved. That's where they're going to go.
Right.
And then Dalinar has kind of an epiphany here about actually the tactics to do that would be kind of silly,
right? And he after talking with everyone, he realizes that the real target is probably not going to be Yakaved. So yeah, that's the like the kind of the climax of this chapter is that. So
Hang on here. Dalinar interrupted a discussion of how to fortify Yakaved's border. He offered some insights, but mostly listened as they explained their plans. Stockpiles here and garrisons there. They hoped the Windrunners would be able to scout for them. Dalinar nodded, but found that something bothered him about this battle plan. A problem that he couldn't define. They had done well. Their lines of supply had been drawn realistically, and they had their scout posts covered. What then? What was wrong? Mm-hmm. The door opened, revealing Navani, who froze when she saw Dalinar, then melted into a relieved smile. He nodded to her as one of the Veden High Princes explained why they shouldn't abandon the Blackwater strip of land running east of the Horneater Peaks. Aladar had been ready to cede it and use the peaks as a barrier. It's not only about the opportunity to levy troops from His Majesty's Horneater subjects, Bright Lord. The High Prince Nan, is it Uriah? No, Urien explained in Alethi. These lands are lush and well-appointed, buffered from storms by the very Alethi Highlands you've been speaking of. You've always fought desperately for them against invasions, because they will succor those who seize them and provide staging areas for assaults on the rest of Yakaved. Dalinar grunted. Navani stepped over to where most of them stood around the table map, so he reached out and put his arm around her waist. He's right, Aladar. I spent a long time skirmishing on that very border. That area is more important strategically than it first appears. Holding it is going to be tough, Aladar says. We'll get mired in an extended battle for that ground. Which is what we want, isn't it? The Veden High Prince said. The longer we stall the invasion, the more time it will give my Veden brethren to recover. Yes, Dalinar said. Yes. It was easy to get mired in battles along that Veden front. How many years had he spent fighting false bandits there? Let's take a break. I want to consider this, he says.
There's something that's tickling his head here. He's like, yeah.
Yeah.
There's something here. He's like, I need a break to think about it. Like, I like this.
Right.
I like this from Dalinar. He's being the tactician here.
The others seemed to welcome the opportunity. Many stepped into the larger chamber outside where attendants with span reeds waited to relay information. Navani stayed beside Dalinar as he surveyed the map. It's good to see you up, she whispered. You're more patient than I deserve. You should have dumped me out of bed and poured the wine on my head. I had a feeling you'd push through. Well, I have for now, he said. In the past, a few days or even weeks of sobriety didn't mean much. You're not the man you were back then. Oh, Navani. I never grew beyond that man. I just hid him away.
Yeah.
He couldn't explain that to her yet. Instead, he whispered thanks into her ear and rested his hand on hers. How could he ever have been frustrated at her advances? That's a pretty heavy little paragraph.
Yeah.
Yeah, I never grew beyond that man. I just hid him away.
Right.
You know, I will say that all of that being true, like his thoughts on that, it shows great character.
Right.
Because at the very least, he understands, you know, what he is or was, what he wrestles with, and he's willing to protect those from it.
Right. Trying to, anyways.
Trying to, yeah. For now, he turned his attention to the maps and lost himself in them. The fortresses, the storm bunkers, the cities, the drawn-in supply lines. But what is wrong? What am I not seeing? There's 10 silver kingdoms. There's 10 oath gates. The keys to this war. Even if the enemy can't use them, they can hinder us by seizing them.
Right.
There's one in Alvkar, which they already have. There's one in Natanatan, in the Shattered Plains, which we have. There's one in Vidnar, one in Azamir, one in Thalen City, and all three are ours. But one in Ral Elorum and one in Kurth, both the enemies by now. But there's one in Shinovar, belonging to neither side.
Right. So Ral Elorim and Kurth are probably the ones where Ira and those countries that were like, they believe in the one, that's their religion, they have the golden hair. Evie's from that area. They said, well, we've sided against them this many times. Let's do something new.
Let's do something different.
Because the one wants to have new experiences, and we've never sided with them. Maybe that'll have a different outcome this time. So those are probably the places he's saying that already have those two. And the one in Shinovar doesn't belong to either side, because Shinovar will not.
Doesn't belong to either side.
Right, and they are not responding to anyone. They're like Switzerland. They're staying completely neutral.
That left the one in Panatham, in Babatharnam, which the combined Irieli and Rirran armies might have captured already, and one in Akina, which Yasna was confident had been destroyed long ago.
There you go.
Yaakoved made the most sense for the enemy to attack, didn't it? Only once you engaged yourself in Yaakoved, you're stuck fighting a long war of attrition. You lost mobility. You had to dedicate enormous resources to it. He shook his head, feeling frustrated, and he left the map, trailed by Navani, and stepped into the other room for refreshment. At the wine table, he forced himself to pour a warm spiced orange, something with no kick. Yasna joined the group, delivering a stack of papers to her mother. "May I see?" Ile asked. "No," Yasna replied. That's funny. Dalinar had a smile in his drink.
Yeah.
"What secrets are you keeping?" Ile asked. "What happened to your uncle's grand talk of unification?" "Well, I suspect that each monarch in this group," Yasna said, "would prefer to know the state secrets are allowed to remain their own. This is an alliance, not a wedding." I love that.
Yeah. And I like that Queen Ned nods. Queen Fen nods at that. Yeah, like, yeah, that's right.
Nods at that, yeah. As for these papers, Yasna continued, "they happen to be a scholarly report which my mother has not yet reviewed. We will release what we discover once we're certain that our translations are correct and that nothing in these notes might give our enemies an advantage against the city." Yasna cocked an eyebrow. "Or would you prefer our scholarship to be sloppy?" The Aegis seemed mollified by this. "I just think," Ile said, "you showing up here with them is a slap in the face for the rest of us." "Ile," Yasna said, "it is good you are here. Sometimes an intelligent dissenting voice tests and proves a theory. I do wish you'd work harder on the intelligent part." Jeez.
We haven't had a hell of a lot of Yasna in this book. You know, for the very first part,
I know,
everyone thought
Yasna.
She was still dead, and she comes back all dramatically. She's back. And then we follow characters out to Kolinar, and we're there for a bunch. So we haven't had a lot of time with Yasna. So it's really great that every time they have these meetings, Yasna's there, and we get to have a little bit of time with her.
Yeah, I would say that's also a highlight, is her giving the tongue lashing to Ile.
Yeah.
Dalinar downed the rest of his drink and smiled as Ile settled back in her chair, wisely not escalating a verbal battle against Yasna. Unfortunately, Ruthar did not have a similar sense. "Well, don't mind her, Ile," he said, mustache wet with wine. "The godless have no concept of proper decency. Everyone knows that the only reason to abandon belief in the Almighty is so that you can explore vice." Oh, Ruthar, Dalinar thought. "You can't win this fight. Yasna has thought about the topic far more than you have. It's a familiar battleground to her. Storms, that was it. They aren't going to attack Yaakoved, Dalinar shouted, interrupting Yasna's rebuttal. So he gets a eureka moment there.
Yeah, because he says it's a familiar battleground to her.
And that's...
what kind of ignites
And that's where
it.
He gets this idea.
Yeah.
That Yaakoved is familiar to them, and so that's why they won't attack there.
Right.
And it interrupts Yasna's rebuttal on Ruthar, which I would have loved to have heard.
Which is unfortunate. Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, and so it's kind of unfortunate. But, okay, so those in the room turned to him, surprised. Yasna's mouth was half open. Dalinar, High Prince Aladar asks, but we decided that Yaakoved was the most likely... No, Dalinar says. No, we know the terrain too well. The Alethi and the Vedans have spent generations fighting over that land. Well, then what then? Yasna asks.
So it's not that... it's not that the Voidbringers... it's what he's saying here is that the Voidbringers know not to fight the Vedans and the Alethi in that area because they know it too well. They won't win against the Alethi and Vedan there.
Right.
Right. So it'll be
They've
a useless...
They've had generations fighting over it.
Right.
Right.
Isn't that awesome? The realization, mm-hmm. like, shit, we know it too well. They won't dare attack us if they're smart.
Right.
Yeah,
it's so it has to be somewhere
it's
else.
It's great. Yeah, it's great.
Dalinar ran back into the map room. The others flooded in around him. They went to Marat, right? Dalinar asks. They cut through Emul and into Marat, silencing span reeds nationwide. But why? Why did they go there? Azir was too well fortified, Aladar said. From Marat, the Voidbringers can strike at Yaakoved from both of the west and the east. Through the bottleneck? In Triax? Dalinar asks. We talk of Yaakoved's weakness, but that's relative. They still have a huge standing army and strong fortifications. If the enemy wades into Yaakoved now, while solidifying their own power, it will drain their resources and stall their conquest. That isn't what they want right now. When they still have the upper hand and momentum, well then where then? Nan Yurian asked. A place that was hit hardest of all by the new storms. Dalinar points at the map. A place whose military might was severely undermined by the Everstorm. A place with an Oathgate. Queen Fen gasped, save hand going to her lips. Thalen City? Navani asks, are you sure? If the enemy takes Thalen City, Dalinar says, they can blockade Yaakoved, Carbranth, and what few lands in Alethkar we still own. They can seize command of the entire southern depths and launch naval assaults on Tashik and Shinovar. They could swarm New Netanin and have a position from which to assault the Shattered Plains. Strategically, Thalen City is far more important than Yaakoved, but at the same time, far worse defended. But they would need ships, Aladar says. The Parshmen took our fleet, Fen said. After that first terrible storm, Dalinar said, how were there any ships left for them to take? Fen frowned. As I think about it, that's remarkable, isn't it? There were dozens remaining, as if the winds left them alone, because the enemy needed them. That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
I just had a thought here, just reading this with you.
Yeah. Go ahead.
What if...
Let him cook. Let him cook, people.
Let him cook. What if this brilliant realization of Dalinar's, mm-hmm. okay, with Thalen... So Queen Fen, when they first got involved, was like, look, you know, I don't think I want the Blackthorn here.
Right.
She was hesitant. She was concerned. What if this is just a way for Dalinar to get Thalen City? Because he wants it.
Does he want it?
I'm just playing around. Just let me play.
Okay, sorry. I just said let him cook, and then I was like, nope, no more cooking.
I'm just saying, I don't know. Like, there's always been this part of me with this story that is like, you know, wondering... whether Dalinar, this whole wrestling match that he's doing with the Blackthorn, if how much of it it's real or imagined, you know, like Taravangian is suffering from two characters. What if Dalinar is suffering as well? And it's the Blackthorn that's just kind of being quiet, letting Dalinar delude himself into thinking that he's Dalinar.
Yeah.
When all along, all of this plays exactly into what the Blackthorn wants.
I would say that if Dalinar had some of what Shallan was going through, and that there was an actual persona that could keep thoughts and plans away from him, then we'd be worried. But the Blackthorn is still him. If he's had these plans, we would have read them in the POVs, I think. The other thing that tells me this is right is that Kaladin had a vision that Dalinar was going to be in trouble in Thalen City. So Dalinar's just finally catching up to what Kaladin kind of already saw happen.
Which is pretty great.
Which is pretty awesome.
That's pretty great. Okay, let's just go with it. I'm done playing around now.
Okay, I'm
done playing.
Okay.
The parchment took our. But I had a really weird thought earlier in this chapter when they said about having Western hats, and I thought, what if this story is just like it's described like this, but it's actually not this at all. It's like anyways, it's kind of hard to explain in this pod. I'll try to drop that one on you later.
Okay.
Okay. As I think about it, that's a remarkable. Where were we? The parchment took our fleet, right? How were there any ships left? It's remarkable, isn't it? There were dozens remaining, as if the winds left them alone because the enemy needed them. Storms, I've been thinking too much like an Alethi, Dalinar says. Boots on stone, but the enemy moved into Murat immediately, a perfect position from which to launch at Thalen City. We need to revise our plans, Fenn says. Peace, Your Majesty, Haladar says. We have armies in Thalen City already. Good Alethi troops. Nobody is better on the ground than Alethi infantry. We have three divisions there right now, Dalinar said. We'll want at least three more. Sir, Fenn's son says. Brightlord, that's not enough. Dalinar glanced at Fenn, and her wizened admiral nodded. Speak, Dalinar says.
I love that Queen Fenn's son speaks up here. It's just a tiny little thing, but I love him.
It's so good.
Yeah.
It's so good.
It feels like he's come a long way since the last time we saw him. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And his encounter with Dalinar has maybe made him better, you know? And I love
this.
I
think so.
Yeah.
Sir, the youth says, we're glad to have your troops on the island. Kellek's breath, if you're going to get into a fight, you definitely want the Alethi on your side. But an enemy fleet is as much larger problem than you're assuming. One you can't easily fix by moving troops around. If the enemy ships find Thalen City well defended, they'll just sail on and attack Carbranth, or Dumedari, or any number of defenseless cities along the coast. Dalinar grunted. He did think too much like an Alethi. Well, what then? Dalinar asks. Well, we need our own fleet, obviously, Fenn's admiral said. He had a thick accent of mushed syllables, like a mouthful of moss. But most of our ships were lost to the blustering Everstorm. Half were abroad, caught unaware. My colleagues now dance upon the bottom of the depths. And the rest of your fleet was stolen? Dalinar said with a grunt. What else do we have? His Majesty Taravangian has ships at our port, the Vedan High Prince said. And then all eyes turned toward Taravangian.
There we go.
They're merchant ships only, the old man said. Vessels that carried my healers. We haven't a true navy. Did I bring 20 ships? I could perhaps provide 10 more from Carbranth. Do you think he's being kind of unhelpful there? What do you think? The storm took a...
We have to remember, his goals aren't to hinder the coalition. It's to take it over.
Take it
so
over.
So he's the head of it, right? So he wouldn't necessarily be doing anything to undermine the protection of Thalen City. He wants to undermine Dalinar so that he can take the coalition from Dalinar.
Right.
So I don't, I think he is trying to be helpful, even though he might not know much about boats.
Right. And how they could be of any help, especially if they're just merchant ships. The storm took a number of our ships, the Vedan High Prince said, but the civil war was more devastating. We lost hundreds of sailors. We have more ships than we have crew for right now. Fenn joined Dalinar beside the map. We might be able to scrape together a semblance of a navy to intercept that enemy. But the fighting will be on the decks of the ships, and we'll need troops. You'll have them, Dalinar says. Alethi, who've never seen a rough sea in their lives, Fenn asks. Skeptical. She looked to the Aesish generals. Tashik has a navy, doesn't it? Staffed and supplemented by Aesish troops. The generals conferred in their own language. Finally, one spoke through an interpreter. The 13th Battalion, red and gold, has men who do rotation on ships and patrol the Grand Waterway. Getting others here would take much time, but the 13th is already stationed in Yakaved.
So there's a whole battalion
that
has ship experience, which is fucking awesome.
Well, then we'll supplement them with some of my best men, Dalinar says. Storms, we need those windrunners active. Fenn, would your admirals present a suggested course for the gathering and deployment of a unified fleet? Sure, the short woman said. She leaned in, speaking under her breath. I warn you, many of my sailors follow the passions. You're going to have to do something about these claims of heresy, Blackthorn. Already there's talk among my people that this is, at long last, the right time for the Thalens to break free from the Vorin Church. I won't recant, Dalinar said. Even if it causes a whole-scale religious collapse in the middle of a war? He didn't reply. And she let him withdraw from the table, thinking about other plans. He spoke with the others about various items, thanking Navani again for holding everything together. And then eventually he decided to go back down below and take a few reports from his stewards. On his way out, he passed Taravangian, who had taken a seat by the wall. The old man looked distracted by something. Taravangian, Dalinar said, we'll have troops in Yakaved too, in case I'm wrong, so don't worry. The old man looked to Dalinar, then strangely wiped tears from his eyes. Are you in pain? Well, yes, but it is nothing you can fix, he hesitated. You are a good man, Dalinar Colin. I did not expect that.
What do you think?
What do you think?
What do you think about this?
I'm not really sure. When I first read it, I thought, what part of Taravangian is crying?
Right.
Like, is it that there's a diabolical side proceeding with plans only now to realize it's almost like Gollum.
Yeah.
Having it like two sides and then he's playing the one side, but then he realizes, hang on, I'm playing against a good man here.
Right. Well, he's That's wiping tears away from his face. I think he's feeling guilt.
Is that what
guilt.
You think too?
I think he's feeling guilt.
Right.
You are a good man, Dalinar Colin.
And I wasn't expecting that.
I did not expect that. I think he expected that he was going to take down a potential tyrant and that anything he did against Dalinar Colin could be excused because Dalinar is the Blackthorn. But the more he gets to know him, the more he realizes he is a good man. And it's going to really suck when I do the thing that I have to do to him. And he's feeling guilty about it. I don't think he's going to stop himself from doing it. I think he's going to still do it because there's a more vicious side of him that can, you know, emerge any day, right? But I think
how amazing would it be though that Dalinar Dalinar knows the only way that Taravangian can be stopped is if Taravangian does it himself. And what better way than Dalinar to align himself as close as he can to Taravangian?
I mean, that's giving Dalinar, again, credit that he knows what's going on.
I know, a lot of credit. I understand.
I think that Dalinar is being himself and Taravangian... Let him cook.
I know. Taravangian, you're right. Taravangian is being himself and it's having an effect. Yeah,
he's a good person.
That's really great.
This is going to make this even harder. You know? Yeah, sorry. That's another French-Canadian thing, Carlis.
I did not expect that. Ashamed by that, Dalinar hurried from the room, followed by his guards. He felt tired, which seemed unfair, considering he just spent a week basically sleeping. Before seeking his stewards, Dalinar stopped on the fourth floor from the bottom. An extended walk from the lifts took him to the outer wall of the tower, where a small series of rooms smelled of incense. People lined the hallways waiting for glyph wards or to speak with an ardent. More than he'd expected. But then, they didn't have much else to do, did they? "Is that how you think of them already?" a part of him asked. "Only here to seek spiritual welfare because they don't have anything better to do?" Dalinar kept his chin high, resisting the urge to shrink before their states, before their stairs. He passed several ardents and stepped into a room, lit and warmed by braziers, where he asked after Kadash. He was directed onto a garden balcony. Kadash was quietly chipping creme off a planter box. Dalinar settled down beside him. The scarred ardent glanced at him and kept working. "It's very late coming," Dalinar says, "but I wanted to apologize to you for Rathalas." "I don't think I'm the one you need to apologize to," Kadash said. "Those who could bear an apology are now in the Tranquiline Halls. Still, I made you part of something terrible." "I chose to be in your army," Kadash said. "I found peace with what we did. Found it among the Ardents, where I no longer shed the blood of men. I suppose it would be foolish of me to suggest the same to you." Dalinar took a deep breath. "I'm releasing you and the other Ardents from my control. I won't put you in a position where you have to serve a heretic. I'll give you to Taravangian, who remains Orthodox." "No," he replies. "I don't believe you have the option to." "Just listen for one storming moment, Dalinar," Kadash snaps. Then he sighs, forcibly calming himself. "You assume that because you're a heretic, we don't want anything to do with you. Well, you proved that a few weeks ago when we dueled. We don't want to normalize what you've done or what you're saying. That doesn't mean we will abandon our posts. Your people need us, Dalinar, even if you believe you don't." Dalinar walked to the edge of the garden, where he rested his hands on the stone railing. Beyond him, clouds mustered at the base of the peaks, like a phalanx protecting its commander. God, I love that.
Mm-hmm.
It's so cool. From up here, it looked like the entire world was nothing more than an ocean of white, broken by sharp peaks. His breath puffed in front of him, cold as the frostlands, though it didn't seem as bad inside the tower. Are any of those plants growing?" he asked softly. "No," Kadash said from behind. "We aren't sure if it's the cold or the fact that the few storms reach this high." He kept scraping. "What will it feel like when a storm goes high enough to engulf this entire tower?" "Like we're surrounded by dark confusion," Dalinar says. "The only light coming in flashes we can't pinpoint or comprehend. Angry winds trying to tow us in a different direction, in a dozen different directions, or, barring that, rip our limbs from our bodies." He looked towards Kadash, like always. "The Almighty was a constant light. And now you make us question. You make me question. Being an Ardent is the only thing that lets me sleep at night, Dalinar. You want to take that from me too? if he's gone, then there's only the storm. I think there must be something beyond. I asked you before, what did worship look like before Voronism? What did Dalinar... Please just stop. Kadash drew in a deep breath. Release a statement. Don't let everyone keep whispering about how you went into hiding. Say something pedantic like I'm pleased with the work the Voron Church does or and support my ardents, even if I myself no longer have the faith I once did. Give us permission to move on. Storms, this isn't the time for confusion. We don't even know what we're fighting. Kadash didn't want to know what Dalinar had met the thing. Sorry, had met the thing they were fighting. Best not to speak of that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I so want Dalinar to say to Kadash here about that. Like,
yeah.
But I understand Dalinar not wanting to right now.
I just want to draw a line here.
Yeah.
Dalinar is saying to Kadash, take the Ardents and go to someone who believes. You don't need to be with me. I'm a heretic now. I'm excommunicated.
I'm a heretic,
you don't need to be here. And Kadash is like, no, we're not going to leave. Your people need us. You need us, even if you don't know you do. And I mean, this is no surprise to the listeners. I've mentioned it before. I'm an atheist. I don't believe in God. It is, you know, the lot I've chosen. But I really love this sentiment because earlier in the chapter, Dalinar says to the Stormfather, I hurt you. I was afraid you would leave me. And Dalinar has hurt these Ardents, and they are not leaving him, regardless of what he says.
Right?
Mm-hmm. They have their faith. He has his beliefs now, but they're not going to leave his side. And I really like that sentiment. I think it's really, really cool.
What it's also really sort of telling is that it's Dalinar is forging alliances even when he's trying to push them away.
Right.
You know, like he's having an effect. And I quite like this from Kadash. This little pushback and him telling Dalinar, no.
Yeah.
I'm not going anywhere.
No. You need
like
us
he was
right
basically
now.
ordered to leave, and he says no.
Because it's not they're very useful in that they can bring solace to people of faith, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they're not just that; they're scholars, they're brilliant minds. You know, they have worth other than that as well. So, yeah, it's good that they're not leaving his side.
But Kadash's question did leave him considering. Odium wouldn't be commanding the day-to-day operations of his army, would he? Who did that? The Fused? The Voidspren? Dalinar strolled a short distance from Kadash and then looked toward the sky. Stormfather, he asked. Do the enemy forces have a king or a high prince? Maybe a head ardent? Someone other than Odium? The Stormfather rumbled. Again, I do not see as much as you think I do. I am the passing storm, the winds of the tempest. All of this is me. But I am not all of it. Any more than you control each breath that leaves your mouth. Dalinar sighed. It had been worth the thought. There is one I have been watching, though, the Stormfather added. I can see her when I don't see others. Who, a leader? Dalinar asked. Maybe. Men. Both human and singer are strange in what or whom they revere. Why do you ask? Dalinar had decided not to bring anyone else into one of the visions because he worried about what Odium would do to them. But that wouldn't count for people already serving Odium, would it? When is the next high storm?
Okay, so let's pause here for a second to try to contemplate what's going on here. Dalinar's asking for a leader. Maybe he can bring a leader into a vision and have a talk like he did with Queen Fenn, like he did with Nonagon, like he did with all these other people. Maybe I can have a face-to-face with their leader. Mm-hmm. And he asks the Stormfather, do you know of a leader? And he's like, no, I don't. But there is one I've been watching. One I can see her when I don't see the others. And then he's like, a leader? Right. He's like, maybe. Who do you think this is? Do you have any idea who this her he's talking about could be?
But hang on, but isn't this isn't this Dalinar asking who the leader is for the Voidbringers?
Right. That's exactly what he's doing.
Right.
But he's like, I don't see what you think I see, but there is one among them that I've been watching, and I can see her when I don't see the others. He's not sure why, but he can see one of them in the, like, when he passes more than he can see the others. Is there anyone that
I would say,
go ahead.
I would say Venli.
Yeah. Doesn't that sound right? She's got a Spren with her, right?
Yeah.
And when the Spren is out playing, she becomes more like herself, less like this envoy form that she's taken. And so now he's like, when's the next storm? When's the next high storm so that I can try to bring this person in and have a conversation with them? And if it is Venli, this is something we've been waiting for since book one, because Dalinar was supposed to have a tete-a-tete with Eshonai, and it never happened, remember? They sent Adolin instead, and by the time Eshonai met with Adolin, she had already changed forms and wasn't of sound mind anymore.
No.
So anyways, if it is that, it's pretty cool.
That would be very, very cool.
Right.
If we get a conversation between Dalinar and Venli.
Yeah.
What would that even look like? That's fantastic.
Exactly.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's something to look forward to. Okay. Well, we do get a POV change here, and we go back to Teravangian.
Yeah.
For, I think, a few more pages. Yeah. A couple more pages.
We're almost done here.
Teravangian felt old. His age was more than the aches that no longer faded as the day proceeded. It was more than the weak muscles, which still surprised him. It was more than finding that he'd slept through yet another meeting, despite his best efforts to pay attention. It was even more than slowly seeing almost everyone he'd grown up fade away and die. It was the urgency of knowing that tasks that he started today, he wouldn't finish.
Yeah, that's got to be a bummer, right?
It makes him even more interesting because it's kind of like, well, here you are scheming, you're working towards something that you won't finish.
Because the next version of him may not take up that project and continue it into the next day. Right?
Right.
Yeah, it's really interesting. He's like one of the most interesting characters in the series.
He really is. He stopped in the hallway, back to his rooms, hand resting on the strata-lined wall. It was beautiful, mesmerizing. But he only found himself wishing for his gardens in Carbrenth. Other men and women got to live out their waning hours in comfort, or at least familiarity. He let Maral take him by the arm and guide him to his rooms. Normally, Teravangian would have been bothered by the help. He did not like being treated like an invalid. But today, though, well, today he would suffer the indignity. It was a lesser one than collapsing in the hallway. Inside the room, Adratagia sat amid six different scribbling span reeds, buying and trading information like a merchant at a market. She looked at him, but knew him well enough not to comment on his exhausted face or slow steps. Today was a good day of average intelligence, perhaps a little on the stupid side, but he would take that. He seemed to be having fewer and fewer intelligent days, and the ones he did have frightened him. Teravangian settled down in a plush, comfortable seat, and Mabon went to get him some tea. Well, Adratagia asks. She'd grown old, too. with enormous bags around her green eyes, the persistent kind formed by drooping skin. She had liver spots and wispy hair. No man would look at her and see the mischievous child that she'd once been. The trouble the two of them had gotten into. "Vargo?" Adratasia asked. "My apologies," he said. "Dalinar Colin has recovered." "That's a problem." "An enormous one," Teravangian took the tea from Mabon. "More than you can guess, I should say, even with the diagram before you. But please, give me time to consider. My mind is slow today. Have you reports?" "Moalok seems to have settled in the Horneater Peaks. Jashor is on his way there now. We might again soon have access to the death rattles."
There you go. They're tracking.
Okay, whoa.
They're tracking Moalok.
Moalok?
Right? Yeah, Moloch's the unmade that makes the death rattles
right.
happen, right?
How are they able to track all that?
How indeed?
From the death rattles?
I guess so.
And the diagram?
And the diagram, yeah.
Right. "Very well," he says. "We found what happened to Graves," Adratasia continued. "Scavengers found the storm-blown wreckage of his wagon, and there was an intact span reed inside. Graves is replaceable." "And the shards?" "Irrelevant," Teravangian said. "We won't win the prize through force of arms. I was reluctant to let him try this little coup in the first place."
"You remember Graves, right?"
"With the confrontation with Kaladin?"
"Yeah.
Or,
and,
sorry,
And Moash?"
"And Moash,
yeah,
in the hallway?"
"Yeah, he got Moash to kind of come to his side, and yeah."
"Mm-hmm. He and Graves had disagreed about the diagram's instructions to kill Dalinar or recruit him. And who was to be king of Alethkar? Well, Teravangian had been wrong about the diagram himself many times. So he'd allowed Graves to move forward with his own plots according to his own readings of the diagram. While the man's schemes had failed, so had Teravangian's attempt to have Dalinar executed, so perhaps neither of them had read the diagram correctly. He took some time to recover, frustrated that he should need to recover from a simple walk. A few minutes later, the guards admitted Malata. The Radiant wore her usual skirt and leggings, Thalen style, with thick boots. She took a seat across from Teravangian at the low table and then sighed in a melodramatic way. "This place is awful. Every last idiot here is frozen, ears to toes." She had been this confident. Had she been this confident before bonding to Aspren? Teravangian hadn't known her well enough then. Oh, he'd managed the project full of eager recruits from the diagram, but the individuals hadn't mattered to him. Until now.
Mm-hmm.
"Your Spren," Adratasia asked. "Has she said anything that, has she anything to report?" "No," Malata said, "only the tidbit from earlier about other visions Dalinar hasn't shared with everyone."
"Right."
"Oh. So is Malata's Spren going into the visions then to spy on Dalinar's visions?
Or just sneaking around in the hallways, making herself unseen and listening?"
Right.
Because remember, just because Syl and Pattern can do it doesn't mean the other side doesn't have something.
Aren't doing it,
yeah.
Right. And Teravangian asked, "Has the Spren expressed any reservations about the work that you've given her?" "Damnation," Malata said, rolling her eyes. "You're as bad as Colin's scribes, always poking." "We need to be cautious, Malata," Teravangian said. "We can't be certain what your Spren will do as her self-awareness grows. She will surely dislike working against the other orders." "You're as frozen as the lot of them," Malata said. She started glowing, stormlight rising from her skin. She reached forward, whipping off her glove, safe hand no less, and pressing it against the table. Marks spread out from the point of contact and little swirls of blackness etching themselves into the wood. The scent of burning filled the air, but the flames didn't persist if she didn't want them to. The swirls and lines extended across the tabletop, a masterwork of engraving accomplished in moments. Malata blew off the ash. The surge that she had used, division, caused objects to degrade and burn or turn to dust. It also worked on people.
Mm-hmm. Dangerous stuff.
Degrade and burn and turn to dust.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty
upsetting.
Spark is fine. So Spark.
It's her spren, yeah.
Her spren. Spark is fine with what we're doing, Milada said, pressing her finger down and adding another swirl to the table. I told you. The rest of them are idiots. They assume all the spren are going to be on their side. Never mind what the Radiance did to Spark's friends. Never mind that organized devotion to honor is what killed hundreds of Ash Spren in the first place. And Odium? Teravangian asked, curious. The diagram warned that the personalities of the Radiance would introduce great uncertainty to their plans.
Right.
Spark is game for whatever it takes to get vengeance. And what lets her break stuff? Milada grinned. Someone should have warned me how fun this would be. I'd have tried way harder to land the job. What we do is not fun, Teravangian said. It is necessary, but it is horrible. In a better world, Graves would have been right. We would be allies to Dalinar Colon. You're too fond of the Blackthorn, Vargo, Adratagia warned. It will cloud your mind. No, but I do wish I hadn't gotten to know him. That will make this difficult. Teravangian leaned forward, holding his warm drink. Ingo tea with mint. It smells of home. With a start, he realized he'd probably never live in that home again, would he? He thought perhaps he would return in a few years, but he wouldn't be alive in a few years. Adro, he continued, Dalinar's recovery convinces me we must take more drastic action. Are the secrets ready? Almost, she said, moving some other papers. My scholars in Yakaved have translated the passages we need, and we have the information from Milada's spying. But we need some way to disseminate the information without compromising ourselves. Assign it to Dova, Teravangian said. Have her write it. Have her write a scathing, anonymous essay and then leak it to Tashik. Leak the translations from the Dawn Chant the same day. I want it all to strike at once. He set aside the tea, and suddenly sense of Carbranth made him hurt. It would have been so much better for Dalinar to have died by the assassin's blade. For now, we must leave him to the enemy, to the enemy's desires, and that will not be as kind as a quick death. Will it be enough? Milada asked. That old axe hound is tough. It will be enough, Dalinar. Dalinar would be the first to tell you that when your opponent is getting back up, you must act quickly to crush his knees. Then he will bow and present to you his skull. Oh, Dalinar, you poor, poor man.
So his plan is coming coming up here. He's going to release some kind of secrets and...
Yeah.
And the translation of the Dawn Chant of the Dawn same Chant. Day.
Release it at once. Yeah. Yeah.
So that all these people are flooded with some kind of secret information, and Teravangian believes that this will be a crushing blow to Dalinar.
Right.
Do you have any positing what you think it might be?
The secrets? Well, could be the... could have something to do with Rathalas.
Right.
Could have something to do with the Blackthorn and the truth of that
some
battle
of the stuff
in his
that
past.
He's done, yeah.
His wife.
Yeah.
It could be what happened to Sadeas.
Yeah. That's very possible too.
It could be Adolin is going to his family suffer a huge blow for that.
Right.
I mean, just imagine if Sadeas is, if that's found out.
Right.
It ruins Adolin. It ruins Colin.
Yep.
That's it.
Yeah.
Game over.
Yeah.
And then somebody else steps in and takes over the entire effort.
Right. That's a good, that's a pretty good call.
So that, or what other secret could be dropped? The only thing I can think of is something that would frame Dalinar for something that he didn't do.
Right.
So, you know, ruin him for something. So like, I mean, it could be framing him for Sadeus. Framing, well, I know we've flogged a dead horse on this one, but framing him for killing his brother.
Right.
Even though we know it was the other, but I couldn't begin to imagine the possibilities that Taravangian could have with this secret. I don't know. Right.
I'll tell you this. You mm-hmm. do not have long to wait.
Oh, wow.
So you're going to find out all those things, whatever it is that he's got up his sleeve pretty soon. So you already mentioned that your
highlight was Fen, but you know what? Like going over this with you, man, I think there's probably three or four highlights.
Yeah, there is. Yasna's I think Fen retort
was good.
To,
I think Yasna was good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Kadash.
Yeah, the whole stuff with Kadash was really good too.
Was really good.
Mine still is the Stormfather calling Kaladin Stormblessed, like acknowledging that he's Stormblessed, and he's legit the storm. Like it's like he anointed him by saying it or something. It's really great.
Pardon me. I don't know. You know what? After covering it, I like it. I like it much better.
Yeah, it's cool. And the way that the Stormfather almost sounds like one of Bridge Four by saying, "I for some reason I just believe
he's one of them."
Yeah, he's just like, I don't know what it is, but I have hope now. I believe that he'll come back. Yeah, it's really, really cool.
You know what though? I gotta add this highlight: Taravangian's tear.
Taravangian, dude, he's always
Taravangian's
great.
Taravangian's tear.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah, and then really even good. At the end there, when he's explaining about, you know, release the secrets and we have to move forward, I wish I'd never met him.
Well, Malata's like, let's get him. And he's all like, this is not something to be fun about. This is a horrible thing we're doing.
It's a horrible thing. I still think that the undoing of Taravangian is going to be Taravangian.
Like the sympathetic part of him or whatever, like the...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Only he will undo his plans.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
There is no one else... who can beat him but him?
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be amazing?
It would be pretty cool. It would be pretty awesome. You know what else is really awesome?
An info
the
dump?
Info dump from our good friend Buzzkill Joe. So yeah, cool. We want to say thank you to Buzzkill Joe for doing all the hard work. Here is the info dump for chapter 107, the first step. Excuse me. So we have Nan Urien. He's a newly appointed Veden High Prince. His younger brother is also a High Prince, presumably of a different princedom. The Veden Civil War must have killed a lot of nobility that he marks here. Mintez is Aladar's bodyguard and the bearer of Aladar's plate and blade. Aladar himself is a general, not a warrior, so he doesn't wear it. Dalinar's dad, like, we don't even have a name, but we finally get something from about their father. His father had been too busy getting himself cut apart with foolish duels, including the one where he had taken a blow to the head, and he was never right after that. So he must have had some major head trauma, and he was just never the same person after that, which is kind of sad, you know? Mm-hmm. Kralt is Fen's son's name. Dalinar likes to forget names that he's been explicitly told. This is what Buzzkill says. He Dalinar likes to forget names. He has been explicitly told. It's his most relatable characteristic, is what Buzzkill says. It makes him the most relatable that he just doesn't remember people's names. It's really good.
I can relate to that one.
Yeah. Dova is the Ardent that stumbled upon what the diagram was doing. Taravangian was forced to either recruit her or kill her, and clearly he recruited her. Joshar is a person. He's the head of the diagram's silent gatherers, so people that just are out there recording information. And Moloch seems to have settled in the Horde Aether Peak. Joshar is on his way now, so he's one of those people that get information for the diagrams organization, which is really, really cool. Spark is Malata's Radiant Spryn. She's angry with what the ancient Knights Radiant did to her fellow Ash Spryn. She's been spying on Dalinar, and she likes to break stuff.
Mm.
So Kaladin and co. likely saw some Ash Spryn in Celebrant. They passed a group of ash-colored Spryn sitting around at a table and watching the crowds. We kind of talked about this, that we thought that maybe because her Knight Radiant Order was a Dustbringer, that those Ash Spryn were probably from that order. Division is the surge that they use. It causes objects to degrade, burn, or turn to dust. And realization here, it also works on people. The most troublesome part of this is that this is the second surge the Skybreakers have. The Skybreakers have the ability to fly like the Windrunners do, the gravity one, and they also have this surge of division, so they can kind of destroy, which is really, really scary. A scary combination, I think. Beards in Alethkar are very fashionable these days. This is a very...
they're not very fashionable, yeah.
It's just really funny that he put that in there. They're not very fashionable. Ingo tea is boiled Ingo tea with mint. Smells reminded Caravangian of his home, of Carbranth. And then... Dalinar says that he's decided not to bring anyone else into one of the visions because he's worried about what Odium would do to those people. But he says this might not count for people already serving Odium, which is why he gets this idea at the end that maybe I can bring in a servant of Odium into the vision and have a conversation with them. You posit that it's Venli. Right. I say that if it is Venli, it's pretty cool, but we don't know exactly who it is yet. So
we don't know. Yeah.
So that's the end of the info dump. Thank you very much to Buzzkill Joe for all the hard work and all the information. We really appreciate you and everything you do for us. All right. So that's the end of the chapter, everyone. We are going to be covering one chapter next episode.
Just
again.
Just one.
It's 108, and it's called Honor's Path. Really excited
for
this
title.
Yeah, it's a really good title. Really excited for it. If you want, we have a live read coming up really soon. So I'm sure there's going to be a few of them in part five, but there is one coming up at the end of part four. If you want to be able to have a chance to be listening live when Jack reads this stuff, go to patreon.com/heroesof, sign up for the Patreon, and you can get onto the Discord link, and we'll have all that set up. That's going to be coming in like a couple of weeks here. So we're raring to go for this. If you want to reach out to us.
I always get nervous about live reads, but
you do.
They're all
But you know what? That's kind of what makes half of it the best thing, that you're nervous. It's great. You don't know what to expect.
Of course I'm nervous. Of course.
If you want to reach out to us and tell us that we've gotten anything wrong or that you love us, you can do so at heroesofacatha@gmail.com. You can reach out to us on the subreddit or the Facebook page. Best place to interact with us, though, is on Instagram at the Storm Pod. All right, bud. That's it. I'm so glad that we're back recording. I really needed it. I really needed this time. And thank God for Dalinar. You know, cheers to Dalinar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's hope for good things.
Yeah. All right, everyone. We love you very much. Until next time.
Take care, everybody.
The Storm Pod is brought to you by Heroes of. Music and theme song by Jack Forrest Productions. Additional music by Jason Moray. Produced by our wonderful Patreon team and the Heroes of Acathra.